European media writing pro-U.S. stories under U.S. pressure. So here's a German journalist, RT.
Well, I've been a journalist for about 25 years, and I was educated to lie, to betray, and not to tell the truth to the public. But seeing right now, within the last months, how the German and American media tries to bring war to the people in Europe, to bring war to Russia. This is a point of no return, and I'm going to stand up and say it is not right what I have done in the past to manipulate people, to make propaganda against Russia, and it is not right what my colleagues do and have done in the past, because they are bribed to betray the people, not only in Germany, all over Europe. The reason writing this book was that I'm very fearful of a new war in Europe, and I don't like to have this situation again, because war is never coming from itself. There is always people behind it to push for war. And this is not only politicians, this is journalists too. And I just have written in the book how we have betrayed in the past our readers just to push for war, and because I don't want this anymore. I'm fed up with this propaganda. We live in a banana republic and not in a democratic country where we have press freedom, where we have human rights. If you see the German media, especially my colleagues who day by day write against the Russians, who are in transatlantic organizations and who are supported by the United States to do so, well, people like me, I became honorary citizen of the state of Oklahoma in the United States. Just why? Just because I write pro-American. I wrote pro-American. I was supported by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the CIA. Why? Because I should be pro-American. I'm fed up with it. I don't want to do it anymore. And so I've just written a book not to earn money. No, it will cause a lot of trouble for me, just to give the people in this country, in Germany, in Europe, and all over the world, just to give them a glimpse of a view what goes up behind the closed doors. Yes, there is many examples for that. If we go just back to history, if you go into the year 1988, if you go to your archives, you will find in March 1988 that there was in Iraq, the Kurdish people have been gassed with poisoned gas. That is known all over the world. But in July 1988, they sent me to a town called Zubaydat, that is on the Iraqi-Iranian border. There was war. It was war between the Iranians and the Iraqis, and I was sent there to photograph how the Iranians have been gassed with poisoned gas, with German poisoned gas. You call it Lost and Zarin, mustard gas, made by Germany. They have been gassed, and I was there to make photographs how these people have been killed by poison gas from Germany. When I came back to Germany, there was just one small photo in a newspaper, in the Frankfurter Allgemeine, and there was one small article not writing how impressive, brutally, how inhuman, how terrible it was to kill decades after the end of the Second World War people with German poisoned gas. So this was a situation I feel misused for having been there and just to give a documentary what has been done, but not being allowed to cry out to the world what we have done behind closed doors. Up to today, it's not well known in the public that was German public gas. There have been hundreds or thousands of people gassed in this city of Zubaydat. Now, you ask, what have I done for intelligence agencies? So, please see, most of the journalists you see in foreign countries, they claim to be journalists, and they might be journalists, European or American journalists, but Many of them, like me in the past, are so-called non-official cover. That's what the Americans call that. I have been a non-official cover. Non-official cover means what? It means you too work for an intelligence agency. You help them if they want you to help them, but they will never, never, when you are locked, or when they find out that you are not only a journalist but a spy too, they will never say, "Oh, this was one of our guys." They will not know you. That means non-official cover. So I have helped them in several situations, and I feel ashamed for that too now. Like I feel ashamed that I have worked for a very recommended newspaper like the Frankfurter Allgemeine, because I was bribed by billionaires, I was bribed by the Americans not to report exactly the truth. But I just imagined in my car while I was driving to this interview, I just tried to work out in my brain what would have happened if I would have written a pro-Russian article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine. Well, I don't know what would have happened, but we were all educated to write pro-European, pro-American, but please, not pro-Russian. So I'm very sorry for that, but this is not what I understand for democracy and for press freedom. I'm very sorry for that. Well, Yes, I understand your question very well. Germany is still a kind of a colony of the United States. You see that in many points, like the majority of the Germans don't want to have nukes in our country, but we still have American nukes. So we are still a kind of a colony of the Americans. And being a colony, it is very easy to approach young journalists through what is very important here is transatlantic organizations. All journalists from really respected and recommended big German newspapers, magazines, radio stations, TV stations, they are all members or guests of those big transatlantic organizations. And there, in these transatlantic organizations, you are approached to be pro-American. And there is nobody coming to you and say, "Well, we are the Central Intelligence Agency. Would you like to work for us?" No, this is not the case how it happens. What they do, these transatlantic organizations, is they invite you. They invite you for seeing the United States. They pay for that. They pay all your expenses and everything. So you are bribed. You get more and more corrupt. Because they make you good contacts. You won't know that those good contacts are, let's say, non-official covers, or officially people working for Central Intelligence Agency or other American agencies. So you make friends. You think they are friends, and you cooperate with them. They ask you, "Well, could you do me this favor? Could you do me that favor?" And so your brain more and more is brainwashed through these guys. And your question was, is this only the case with German journalists? No, I think it is especially the case with British journalists, because they have a much closer relationship. It is especially the case with Israelis, of course, with French journalists for a part, not that big as with German or with British journalists. It is the case for Australian journalists, for journalists from New Zealand, from Taiwan, from, well, there is many countries in the Arab world, like Jordan, for example, like Oman, the Sultanate of Oman. There is many countries where this happens, where you find people to claim they are respected journalists, but if you look behind them, you'll find they are puppets on a string of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I'll give you one example. Sometimes the intelligence agencies, they come to your office and want you to write an article. I give you an example not from strange other journalists, from me myself. I've just forgotten the year. I just remember that the German Foreign Intelligence, Bundesnachrichtendienst, it is just a sister organization of the Central Intelligence Agency. It was founded by the American Intelligence Agency. So one day, the BND, this German Foreign Intelligence Agency, came to my office at the Frankfurter Allgemeine in Frankfurt. And they wanted me to write an article about Libya and about Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. I had absolutely no secret informations regarding Colonel Muammar Gaddafi and Libya. But they gave me all these secret informations, and they just wanted me to write, to sign the article with my name. I did that, but it was an article that was published in the Frankfurt Allgemeine that originally came from the Bundesnachrichtendienst, from the German Foreign Intelligence Agency. So do you really think that this is journalism, intelligence agencies writing articles? Oh yes, that article, I have reprinted it partly in my book. That article was how Libya and Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, how he secretly tried to build a poison gas factory, I think in Rabta was the name, yeah. And I got all those informations. It was a story that was printed worldwide 2 days later. But I had no information on that. It was the intelligence agency that wanted me to write this article. So, but this is not the way journalism should work, that intelligence agencies, that they decide what is printed and what not. If I say no, I give you an example from a very good example if you say no. Well, we have a rescue unit in Germany with helicopters for traffic accidents. It's called, they call themselves the Yellow Angels. There was one guy who didn't want to cooperate. He was a pilot of the helicopter service of the Yellow Angels in Germany. This guy said no to the Foreign Intelligence Service, Bundesnachrichtendienst, when they approached him and wanted him as a non-official cover to work for the German Foreign Intelligence Agency, under, just to pretend to be somebody from the Yellow Angels. So what happened was that he lost his job. And the court in Germany, the judge decided that they were right, because such a guy could not be trusted. He was kicked off his job because he didn't cooperate with the Foreign Intelligence Service. So I knew what would happen if I would not cooperate with intelligence services. Well, I have had, let me say, one, two, six times my house was house searched because I was accused by the public prosecutor, the German public prosecutor. I was accused of leaking secrets of states. Six times house searched. Well, they hoped that I wouldn't do that ever again. But I think it's worse that the truth will come out one day. The truth won't die. And I don't mind what will happen. I've had three heart attacks. I have no children. So if they want to bring me to court or to prison, so it's worse for the truth.
Thank you, RD. Dr. Udo, Ulfkott. Dr. Udo Ulfkott is a top German journalist and editor, and has been for more than two decades, so you can bet he knows a thing or two about mainstream media and what really happens behind the scene. It's important to keep in mind Dr. Ulfkott is not the only person making these claims. Multiple reporters have done the same, and this kind of truthfulness is something we'll need more of. Ever since Operation Mockingbird, CIA-based initiative to control mainstream media, more and more people are expressing their concern that what we see in the media is nothing short of brainwashing. This is also evident by blatant lies that continue to spam the TV screen, especially when it comes to topics such as health, food, war, terrorism, poverty, and more. And as to war and what constitutes a crime and what will get you locked up, remember, we hung the judges that went along with Nazism, and with Trump being the Nazi, being challenged by former ex-CIA goons with blood on their hands up to their eyeballs, We've got Poppy's babies lying blatantly about the Nuremberg Principles when he says, you know, orders is no excuse. You cannot, you know, you had the Nuremberg defense saying I was just following orders is said from death rows and you know, life without paroles, okay? So, when Glenn Greenwald is lying blatantly saying, look what just happened with the second oil war, disputing the challenge to Trump from government veterans with blood on their hands and a guilty conscience, unlike Greenwald, now he's Poppy's babies, okay? The billionaire paying him to shut up about the Saudi U.S. funding of ISIS, the 19,000 Swiss bank accounts, UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland, Poppy Bush's dad, Prescott, Union Bankster, because George Walker got in trouble for funding Hitler in the run-up to the Second World War. Of course, Henry Ford did not, for building Fords or engines in Germany during the Depression, and they spared the ball bearing factories during that supposed war that is really being launched against the people who threw 20 million plus soldiers to stop us and sat in Moscow as the Nazi war machine 5 miles away.
Forward this very sinister figure. What is he doing? Why does anybody believe what he says is the first question. But in order to get this cleared up, we wanted to go to an excellent source, an unimpeachable source on these matters. And that is our friend Thierry Maison, who is in Damascus, Syria, we believe. And I think he can enlighten about it. So, Thierry, please tell us about the connection of Erdogan to these terrible terrorist attacks.
Yes, to understand what happened first in Paris in last November and this week in Brussels, you have to know all the tricks between Turkey, the European Union and France about the Kurdish question. You have to know that at the beginning of 2011, the French Minister of Foreign Affairs, Alain Juppé, make a secret agreement with his Turkish counterpart, Ahmet Davutoglu. According to this document, I haven't seen it, but I know a diplomat who studied very carefully this document. According to him, France and Turkey precise the condition of the war in Libya and in Syria. But France take the engagement to create a new state. It's not precisely said in the document, but it could be in Syria and in Iraq, or in Syria only, it's not clear. But to create a new state, they will call it Kurdistan. They will put a Kurdish man as the head of the state. And after that, Turkey will expel all the Turkish people from his country to this new one. So the Turkish people could be alone in Turkey.
So ethnic cleansing, the ethnic cleansing of the Anatolian Peninsula.
Absolutely, ethnic cleansing, yes. So later, when the war starts in Syria, President François Hollande, it was at the end of 2014, organized a secret meeting with President Erdogan, and Erdogan was officially in Paris, but a third people was in this meeting, and this is secret, and it was Saleh Muslim, which is one of the two heads of the Kurdish party in Syria. So, and that guy betrayed the Kurds from Turkey and, you know, the PKK from Abdullah Öcalan. And mm-hmm. He decided to support the French and Turkish project, of course, they say he will be the head of the new state, and he will host all the Kurds from Turkey. At that time, Turkey was sure to obtain this arrangement because Syria was in a very bad condition during that part of the war. But just after that, it was the Battle of Kobane. And you remember this small town, a Kurdish town at the border of a Turkish state.
Right.
And during this Battle of Kobane, the Kurdish people win against Daesh, against the ISIS. So it was a big shock for everybody. And you know that the U.S. decides that if they want to really fight against Daesh, they need to support the Kurdish people because they are the only one to have the victory against them. And of course, France follow the movement, and President François Hollande decide to change his policy, and he receive officially this time at the Elysee Palace a delegation from the Kurdish people of Syria, without Saleh Mousseline, but with two other people. So, of course, it was a big disappointment for Turkey. And that's just at this moment that occurred the big attacks in Paris on the 3rd of November. So, of course, it could be that the first, this attack in Paris was the answer of Turkey for the flip-flop from France. So, but the story continues because you know that the Russian enter in Syria, they make a big bombing against Daesh, and when they withdrew, President Erdogan was thinking it was time again to create this fake Kurdistan to expel its people in this new state. But the relation between Turkey and Russia was very, very bad. You remember, you have a lot of problems between them. First, Turkey is suspected to be responsible for the destruction of a Russian plane in the Sinai in Egypt. After that, it's sure that they destroy a Sukhoi, a Russian plane, military plane in Syria. You know that President Putin accused Erdogan to be responsible of the traffic of oil with Daesh and so on, so it was very bad relations. So, but when the Russian withdrew, it was a good occasion for Turkey to restart this project, except that Russia and the United States have an agreement together against Turkey. They agreed to oust Erdogan. And for that purpose, they began to send weapons to the YPG, the Kurds in Syria. And from the Kurds in Syria, they sent, in fact, this weapon to the PKK, the Kurds in Turkey. So President Erdogan tried to convince the European Union to help him. You know that the European Union gave him 3 billions of euro each year, officially, to help him to host the migrants. But in fact, this money is to continue the war. There is no. I would say that there is no way to verify how we will use this money. And of course, it's because it's for war. President Erdogan, the 18th March, made a very big speech for the anniversary of the Gallipoli battle during the First World War.
First World War. And Jerry, hold that thought. Hang on, hold that thought. We've got one of these automatic station breaks coming up, but we want to get you back to finish the story. And we will be back in just a second here on World Crisis Radio. Don't miss the rest. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now, we're talking with Thierry Maison in Damascus. The audience of this program, you know, based on last week's broadcast, that there is this understanding between Obama and Putin that Erdogan has to go. He must be removed, and these flows of weapons from Russia and from the United States going to the YPG Kurds in northern Syria and the PKK Kurds in southeast Turkey, also in Iraq. So just at the moment where Erdogan is in that bind, we then get the Brussels terror attack. So Thierry, please continue.
So the 18th March, it was the anniversary of the Battle of Gallipoli during the First World War, and President Erdogan made a very important speech broadcast on the TV, and during that speech, he explained that the European Union, and especially Belgium, was supporting the PKK. And he said that because of that, Belgium and the European Union are terrorist organizations. He said also that Belgium must be prepared to have bombing in Brussels, exactly like there is now bombing in attacks in Ankara and Istanbul. And he continues saying that Belgium is hosting the PKK, it's like hosting a snake in his own bed. So, 4 days later, there was this big attack in Belgium, especially in Brussels. Of course, you can think this is only coincidence. You can think that President Erdogan was speaking hardly, not thinking to what will happen 4 days later. But it's not possible. Because the day after the attack in Brussels, all the Erdogan press in Turkey make a big title underlying how it was just and good to punish Belgium with its attacks. So it is very clear that the government of Turkey was reclaiming his own responsibility in this attack in Brussels.
Very striking.
Yes, it's astonishing to see. But right now, the members of the European Union are really not understanding what is happening with Turkey, because they don't understand what is really Turkey, what is the ideology of Erdogan. You know that Erdogan is coming from the Miligorush. Miligorush is an Islamic movement, especially for Turkey, but linked with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and also linked with Hizbut Tahrir. All these three organizations are supporting the idea to create a new caliphate. And of course, this was done by Daesh with the help of Erdogan. Right. And these three organizations are promoting a vision of Islam which is very narrow and intolerant Islam.
Jerry, concerning these groups now, some of these are a little bit less known here, right? The Mili Gorush is the first one. Can you repeat the third one also, in addition to the Muslim Brotherhood?
Mili Gorush is the Turkish one. It was created by Mr. Erbakan, who died 4 years ago. But it was created in 79, something like that. The Muslim Brotherhood is something much more older. It was created in 1928 by the British and by Hassan el-Banna, who was a Jewish guy converted to Islam. And you have a third group, which is a kind of section from the Muslim Brotherhood, which is called Hizb ut-Tahrir, and which is especially developing in Central Asia. So the three groups are working together with the same ideology. And all the leaders of all the jihadist groups in the world, all of them are coming from the Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, or Mili Gorush. All of them. You know, for instance, Osama bin Laden was a disciple of Sayyid Qutb, one of the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Ayman al-Zawahiri was one of the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. But you can have exactly the same remarks with all the leaders of the jihadist groups. But something very specific with Mili Gorush is that they are not only Islamic people, they are also Turkish nationalists. And according to them, the real Turkish people is a special race, a superior race. And they have to govern all the world and to impose Islam to all the world. And President Erdogan himself said that the real Turkish people are the descendants from the Huns, from Attila. He said that. And
What? Wow. Where did he go? Anyway, that was Jerry Masson on World Crisis Radio about Belgium, Syria, everything in between. Now, let me type in after I hit pause here.